Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 14 of Cinemental.
Now this I can do.
I can't compete with you physically, and you're no match for my brains.
I don't give a crap if you covered yourself in peanut butter and had a 15-hooker gangbang.
If you've already listened to the first half of our conversation with Jimmy Palmiotti, this first couple of minutes will seem familiar. But don't worry, there's new stuff after.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the movie podcast that we can only hope you enjoy listening to as much as we enjoy making. My name is Stephen Hovicki, and as always, I'm here with Hassan Godwin and Latham Conger III. Today, our guest is a guy who, for many of my friends, will need no introduction. For everyone else, he's Brooklyn-born.
I am pretty bored right now. Come on.
He's Brooklyn-born, award-winning creator who has written for comics, film, television, and video games, and basically any media you can write or create for. He's done it. Looking through his list of accomplishments and companies worked for, you'll find essentially, well, everyone. Co-founder of multiple comic companies and imprints, including Marvel Knights, and now leading the creator-owned charge with his company Paper Films, with partner and partner, Amanda. We welcome into the show, Mr. Jimmy Palmiotti.
Thank you.
Jimmy, yes, how are you?
Glad to be here again.
So, Jimmy, one of the segments we do is we do a bit called News That Gives Us Fits.
Move!
Latham, what do you got?
Well, perhaps I was the only one that knew this was going to happen, but they finally canceled Tenet from coming out in the movie theater, and that basically just ruined any chance of this summer having some kind of a salvation in August. So I don't think we're going to see movies coming out in the theater this year, personally. That's where I'm at right now, and that's depressing, I think, for all four of us, because we've talked before about...
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because I read an article 2 days ago. Might have been the morning that they made that announcement, actually, that the studio says that Tenet needs to make $800 million in order to be profitable. And that's why they're holding it for a full theatrical release.
And they can hold it, I think.
You ain't getting $800 million worldwide, no matter. Yeah. Not in the next 2 years.
Worldwide, you're getting it once it comes. I mean, not anytime soon,
right? No, they're probably domestic, $800 million, right? For that to work?
No, it just needs $800 million box office.
Oh, box office, but international too? It might make it, you know?
Yeah, all right.
If it's really good, you know?
Right. You know, if it's another Inception, there's no reason why it wouldn't.
Yeah. It could be another Interstellar, in which case it is.
Well.
Hey. Actually, Interstellar, I love Interstellar.
Me too.
So that's one of my
favorites. That's fair.
That's fair.
I mean, the guy is great. Well, the guy's a great director, you know.
The conceptually,
I agree. I don't know what the bookshelf thing was, but never mind.
He's the most interesting conceptual story wise filmmaker out, you know, working today.
Mainstream anyway.
Yeah,
and him and his brother are great writers. They're also great. Give them credit. They're great writers. They work.
And strangely enough. Have two different accents.
Is that true?
Do they really?
If you ever see them talking side by side?
Yeah. What? No kidding.
Have you ever Jonathan Nolan and Christopher? Because Christopher Nolan's got an English accent, and Jonathan Nolan sounds like he's from Jersey.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So it's just really,
crazy. The setup of his next film. It's the setup of the next film. The accent's going to be. It means something.
Did his family like move to the U.S. and then his little brother was born here or something?
I believe they were raised separately. And then came together professionally. I believe that's the story, but don't quote me.
It might be a movie.
Yeah.
I like that story regardless.
Ironically enough, both of them grew up, if they grew up separately, both of them grew up to be great writers, you know, and then came together. So that's because Jonathan Nolan's got credits on his own now, that have nothing to do with his brother. So,
yep.
And the last quick thing I had was I'm also watching this is more of a little bit of a fit this mini series on HBO about the serial killer, the Golden Gate Killer. I'll be alone in the dark, and it's fantastic. It's just the thing that bothers me is they have to promote it and tell the story somewhat, because it's not really a spoiler if you know it from the beginning. The woman who wrote the book that it's based on, she was married to Patton Oswalt, the actor.
Right.
And she died before they solved this case. And the weird imbalanced thing in it is whenever they interview Patton as it's going along, he's remarried by now or whatever. And he's married to
Meredith Salinger.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Oh,
and that must have been quick. But I think
it was a year.
Whenever it was. But there's just this. The only thing I don't like about it is there's this unevenness with the darkness of the story and her story. And then they bring him on and he's just smiling and laughing a lot. And it just, that's the only thing that doesn't work for me. But otherwise, okay.
Because he killed her?
Yeah. I didn't want to give the spoiler, but.
He's got away with it.
Worth watching, but there's this weird tone. Maybe it's going to change in the last couple parts here, but it's good except for that. So,
yeah, it's like they almost like should have shot it while he was still in, still almost in grieving.
Morning.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know the timeline of when they shot it either, which it's interesting when you watch it. They piece stuff together from decades and audio clips and whatever. So at times you don't know where they're grabbing something from, which.
How many episodes is that, Lay?
Six, and they just released four this week, so it should be two left. But it's a fascinating story about a serial killer that most people have never heard of, and he was just one of the worst ever. I mean, he was worse than Zodiac and Jeffrey Dahmer and everyone. He was just an awful person.
Did you by any chance watch the McMillions?
I did not.
Mini?
What is that?
All right. That's the story of the McDonald's Monopoly game scandal.
Yeah, I heard about it, but I didn't watch it.
Holy shit.
Really?
Unbelievable. Yeah. The story is amazing.
Okay.
and it all basically just came down to a guy stealing pieces and selling them to people. Unbelievable.
America.
That's where you can get free fries, Jimmy. McDonald's.
Yeah. Monopoly.
They're only good when they're hot. Once they cool down, they're good.
It's a brick. It's like eating a potato brick.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I got.
Son, what do you got?
Kind of a little bit of controversy. I don't know where I fall on the side of this particular situation, but you know about Dynamite Comics.
Yeah.
And so basically for Latham, there's a, I don't know what you would call them, an insurgency group of comic book creators called Comicsgate.
Bad guys or good guys?
Huh?
Bad guys or good guys?
Depends where you're sitting, I guess, right?
Yeah, it depends on how you, depends on it. And they're kind of like on the outside of the mainstream.
They essentially, Latham, what they did is they came out against the growing, at the time, this was what, 3-4 years ago, the growing kind of the birth of the same thing that gave birth to Me Too and everything else, like the growing political correctness of comics and the way comics sort of shifted a bit. And you started to see a lot more diversity being put into comic books, mainstream comic books. And these guys vocally and very publicly came out against that, saying that by doing this, you were damaging just what was right about comics to begin with. Like you were only making change for change's sake. You weren't making it for the betterment of comics themselves. So their stand is diversity in comics is fine as long as it is A, their way. But as long as, it's not just because you're doing it for PC. I think the core idea behind where they jumped off the ledge from was not terrible, but the way they went about it, kind of continuing their story and kind of unfurling their flag everywhere, they really took a left turn, or more of a right turn, I should say. Gotcha. And
toxic turn.
Yeah. And really, because what it essentially did was it split a lot of the comics professionals into these groups, whereas like you were people who were working for and believed in what Comicsgate was doing, and then you had essentially, again, like we do now, everybody else. And it just, yeah, it essentially all eventually kind of split along a very almost Trumpian line, where you had, good guys and bad guys, essentially. But it's essentially right, the right, yeah, and left of comics, if you want to look at it.
Their argument, it's an interesting argument to have. Like, it's, mm-hmm, a valid discussion. It's just their methods, you know.
Correct.
So, in the process, most mainstream companies were, you know, 10-foot pole as, yes, far as the comics
quickly separated label, themselves.
Right, and apparently, Dynamite was in the midst of, you know, kind of they do these kind of things where they sort of outsource, you know, other characters, mostly independent characters, and then, you know, apply them to their characters, or, you know, on some of their properties, doing kind of like stunt covers, you know, of you know, various different characters. And one of the Comicsgate characters, without getting into too many details, one of the Comicsgate characters would have been featured on their covers, which would legitimize in the eyes of the rest of the industry, would legitimize Comicsgate as something more than an outside agitant, you know. And this stirred up a hornet's nest, as they usually do. So Dynamite at first kind of dug their heels in and doubled down, and now they've canceled all of them. Oh, you know, wow, they've turned around and canceled everything. So
yeah. So what happened was this led to a couple of recorded video calls and interviews with the sort of accepted leader of what the Comicsgate group stands for. It's a comic book artist who has worked for the big two comics for a number of years. And then when all this kind of went down, all of his work dried up and he was sort of kicked to the curb. And so he has got this sort of very loyal following. And what happened was, is it was kind of revealed that the guy who runs Dynamite, listen, at the end of the day, the guy who runs Dynamite, I've known him for years. He's at his heart, he's a good guy. And he was just basically, I think, just wanted to be a nice guy and give the guy a helping hand. He saw he was in a bit of a bind and he said, I can help you sort of show you how to publish comics. I can show you how to do this. So they ended up, I don't want to say partnering with them, but definitely giving collabing them, yeah,
a little bit,
definitely helping them out. And yeah, basically now all that has been exposed and people are ready to, are marching on the tower with pitchforks and torches. So
okay,
it's a lot of extreme like point of views. It's a lot of extreme conversations. You know, if you do this, that means you're that. And if you don't do this, you're this. And if you don't say something there, then you're guilty. And it's very internet, you know, heavy, kind of like if you're quiet, that means you're condoning it. You know, there's a lot of that, right, stuff going on.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's a company, you know, it's a comic book company that makes decisions and they have to deal with the decisions they make as a company. You know, how I feel about it is I don't agree with the decisions and I don't agree with a lot of what a lot of different people say, but I do see a lot of different people's points. But I just think that sometimes I prefer more mature conversation about things. I think, yeah, there's a way we can talk, both sides can talk to each other right in the middle and figure out really what the problem is and how to solve things. And I just think I think taking extreme, you know, it's either all or nothing is never gets anything done in any kind of, I know I sound like a politician right now.
Have you ever used this thing called the internet?
To be honest with you, other than to promote the work I do in the company, I would never be on it. I like to read the internet. I like to communicate with my friends. And I like to read science news. I'm a little bit of a science buff. I like, because every day it is,
yeah,
science news, you know, so that's my favorite thing. I like to read my comic books in my house and my not on the computer. I'm not a tablet guy. I like to hold them in my hands. But you know, like I said, I just think there's a lot of stuff that other people need to sort out. I have to take, you know, my actions speak louder than my words, meaning what I support and what I do. And
sure.
And also, you know, I have to put out my own books and make my own decisions about my company. Yeah. And I definitely am a person. I grew up with a very open-minded, you know, grew up in Brooklyn and went to high school in Manhattan. I have a very different point of view of things than a lot of people that I know. And it's definitely I definitely see the world differently than a lot of people. I gotta say,
and some of these, yeah.
Agreed.
The aspect of it that gives me fits doesn't really fall on any side. It's just every time I look at one of these dust ups, you know.
Yeah.
I always think, well, man, this would be a great conversation to have if only somebody on one of these sides was willing to have this conversation,
right?
You know, like a rational human being.
Yeah.
But it is just so like Jimmy just said, it's so toxic, you know, on no matter how you look at it. And it's almost like you gotta suit up just to like a comment, you know. It's become so electrified that you can't really do anything about it. You can't. We had a segment about it on Rogue Wave or whatever, and we cut the segment to install another segment because we just didn't even want to talk about the CommonSkate situation. Because there's just no way to win, you know. No matter how you fall down on the you know, it's a rabbit hole either way.
Oh, and so yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, they can take a clip of whatever I'm saying and use it and weaponize it.
Yes.
And it happens. Yeah. Steve knows this. Steve, you know, they,
yep.
If I say, you know, hey, that kind of makes sense. Well, all of a sudden I'm this guy.
Tomorrow on Bleeding Cool.
Or if I say,
Jimmy Palmiotti says.
Right. Or if I say, you know what, that's a good point. I never thought of it like that. Well, that means what? But that means I'm, you know.
Yeah, yeah, now you're capitulating with all that.
And so I, you know, I always say I live my life. I have this sign in front of me. I get, it says, my wife makes these signs for me and puts them in front of me. One of them says, slow down and enjoy the moment. That's one. The other one says, keep calm and have integrity, which is a really good one. Like, that's where you're saying, like, if we have integrity and we have a conversation, we can actually have great conversations. Because to run right to hate or run right to extreme, you know, pointing, finger pointing, nothing gets done. And it's
correct.
There's no empathy. There's no real understanding of somebody else's point of view. You know, empathy is the other. And the other thing I have is one that just says, slow the fuck down. That's the other one.
Yeah. That's in case the subtlety of the other two messages was missed. Right. Just stop.
But that's for when he's carrying the box of scissors.
But they're really good messages because, again, if you're calm, you can think.
Yeah.
Right. And if you have integrity, you're not going to go to these places and start, you know, grouping people. I think so. People are so complex. It's hard to say a group. To me, because it's so much individual thought. It's like movies. We could see a movie, three movies about the same subject, and they'll be completely different because everybody brings something different into their art. So it's frustrating to see because we, in the end, I always want everybody to get along because I think comics, we can make some great comics and it comics should be fun. I know it sounds old fashioned, but
they should be.
Yeah, but they should be. You know, politics are in everything, but I don't think everything needs to be weaponized. I think politics are just point of views, and nothing is more fun than two people with different point of views finding that middle ground and realizing, like, oh my god, I never even thought of that. You know, what a great way of
or to find out that you don't even really disagree. You know, it's just how the entire argument's being worded that's the problem.
My neighbor to the left of me is a big, very big Trump supporter. I am not. We love each other. I get along great with him, you know, and we'll talk about it a little bit you know, we'll talk about, instead of getting to the, you know, I'll say what I don't like and he'll say what he likes. And I feel it's my neighbor and it's a person I enjoy and his company and everything. I don't agree with some of the stuff he finds, and he doesn't agree with some of the stuff I find, but we definitely find a middle ground. We sit there and then we'll talk about TV, or we'll talk about, he'll talk about his kids and we'll talk about some funny stuff when we were kids. And, you know, I think a lot of people have a lot of money invested in separating us and making us all fight and making and dividing.
100% agree with you.
And I think that those people, we need to show them differently. And it's sort of like you guys, if you tell me there's a film that I saw and I didn't like it, and then you start talking about it and I go, damn, I got to go back and watch that again, you know, because I didn't even catch that. I think that's a lot of these arguments. And what happens is I think there's a certain amount of people that like the divide, the beach here, and don't want it here. And I feel like the government lately has been like, they want us there. And I feel when we're here
for the last 4 years. Yeah.
And I agree. When we're here though, they have to watch, they have to be on their game and do their job.
Yeah.
So I feel the same way about government, about comics, about all entertainment. I'm like, we all are the same. Deep down, we're all the same. We want the same stuff. We want success. We want enjoyment. We want to have great vacations. We want, you know.
Are you not entertained?
Yeah, man. So anyway, my speech is over, but I'm watching that stuff, and I'm trying to stay in the middle and figure out, like,
it's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah, it's like dismissing people is no good.
Yeah, my point wasn't to have anybody here weigh in on it. It's just to say that, you know, it's another situation where it's a simple argument. You know, the entire situation is a complicated argument.
Absolutely.
Everyone is so afraid of complexity that they simplify, you know, they simplify the discussion to, you know, tribal, you know, directions, tribal divisions.
I want everybody to get along. I want everybody to be happy. It's a little request I have.
It's not too much.
And 100%
in human history.
That's right. So I am. Was that the only thing, Hassan?
That was it. Okay. That was it.
All right.
So and I almost hesitated to even bring that up. So
no, that's all right.
I have a little film news.
Oh,
can I add to that?
Of absolutely. Absolutely.
So on Shudder next month.
Ah, yes.
So
excited.
Is a movie called Random Acts of Violence. It's directed by Jay Baruchel, written by Jay and his friend Jesse. And it stars Jesse Williams, Jordana Brewster, and Jay Baruchel. It's based on a graphic novel Justin Gray and I wrote years ago for Image. About comic creators create a serial killer in their comics, and it becomes very popular. And while the creative team doing the comic go on like a book tour to promote the book, somebody's copycatting the killer, what the killer's doing and dressing up as a killer. So the book and the movie are a little different, okay? So Jay took the book as an inspirational jumping off point and did his own movie. My book is a little more very on the nose about be careful what you create, and it goes in a different direction. The movie goes into this really, it's actually a very layered kind of, felt like a very 80s kind of slasher movie type thing with a little political comments about be careful what you create, awesome. You know, that kind of thing. So they are different, but I'm happy he made the movie from my book, and I got to go on a set and hang out
awesome.
And look at his severed head in the parking lot, you know, like cool stuff like that, and hang out with Jay and watch a guy who's very, very excited to make his own movies.
Did you get to meet Jordana Brewster?
Yeah. You know, just hello. That kind of quick.
Nah.
Jesse Williams was more, you know, Jesse was very personable and
okay. And
chatty. And Jay's just a comic book fan. So Jay Baruchel is, you know, he actually put out
some
comics. But it was interesting, you know, it was just an interesting experience. The movie's kind of bloody and kind of, you know, weird and, it's
as it should be.
It's one of those things I will say, like, you know, I went and reprinted the book. Like I didn't do it through Image. I just printed like 400 copies, on my website. If anybody wanted to buy it, it's like, I think it's like $10 or something like that. But, it's definitely different, but it's definitely pretty cool. And again, when you do a comic, your comic always stays your comic. So you never have to worry about the movies because in the end, my book is not going to change. It's still the same book I wrote. And that's
right.
And that's the thing I enjoy about seeing a film adaptation is I like to see what other people do with it. So it's interesting. You should check it out. But it's next month on Shudder. So it's, if you have a subscription.
I don't know if you remember this, Jimmy, but you kickstarted this originally, correct?
No, not this one. This one I did as Random Acts was like, I was running around with the story and I had a small company said they'll pay for it to be done. So it's a, not Kickstarter, but a company called Kickstart Entertainment. They do The Boys on Amazon and they do a couple of, so the guy, Jason Netter, said, yeah, I'll pay for that if you guys want to do it. And then we'll pick it up. And Image picked it up.
Because I can't remember where I got my hands initially on my copy of it. Mm-hmm. But I remember the day I read it. And I remember when I finished it. And one of the first things I did was I went to Twitter and I sent a tweet to you saying, this needs to be a movie. It was either Twitter or Facebook at the time. And I was like, this needs to be a movie. And when I found out about this about 3 or 4 months ago, I was so happy.
You made it happen. It was your.
I will. God wills it.
Somehow that book got to Jay Baruchel, so it might have been your tweet that Jay said, "I got to check that out." You know, I never even asked Jay like how he found the book, but he bought the rights to it like 6 years ago or something. You know, he just says, "I want to make this." Because I think it has a commentary that needs to be told. You know, it evolved, though, because the first screenplay, I read the first one. He did a second one. But by the time I saw the movie, he said, yeah, there's a third one. And I said, yeah, it kept evolving. Again, a lot to do with a film is where your brain is at the time when you're making it. So in 2011, his brain was somewhere else when he was picking it up. But it's definitely interesting. It's R rated. It's a lot of blood. It's a lot of.
What's the release date on that, Jimmy?
I think it's just next month. I think it's August on Shudder.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a subscription to Shudder, so awesome. I am very, very excited.
You give
about
everybody
that.
Your passcode, and they can all watch it. Then
there you go. That's what I'll do.
What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Don't do that. We find it interesting that your account has been logged into 72 times in 14 different states.
Your activity is a little how shall we say it?
So then from there we will move into Jimmy's guilty pleasure. Another film I hadn't seen.
Me neither.
And that is Cat People.
What did they tell you about me?
I knew I had a brother, but I was only four. I used to fantasize about you when I was in the orphanage.
Yes, I had the same dreams.
Say these eyes so green.
I didn't think you were ready, but you are. I knew it when I saw you with him. Your whole body burns.
I'm not like you!
You tell yourself that it's love, but it isn't. It's blood. Death.
Will you be so long?
From 1982. Directed by Paul Schrader with a running time of 118 minutes, a young woman recently reunited with her brother begins to experience the first pangs of lust for a new man in her life. But when her brother explains that she can only be with him or else bad things will happen, well, things take a decidedly bad turn. Jimmy, I gotta know. What's up with this movie?
Very 80s.
Oh my God.
So when I saw it in the theater, I went with my girlfriend at the time.
Oh boy.
And when we left the theater, I said to her,
she wasn't your girlfriend anymore.
I said, boy, that girl was like hot in that movie. And she goes, that girl? She goes, are you kidding me? She's like built like a boy. And and I said, she don't look like any boy I know. And we had got into a fight after the movie. it wasn't good, you know? And so I remember when I saw it, I was so into the story. I was just from the, once I heard David Bowie in the opening credits and then, and again, it's a visual movie, right?
But absolutely.
An artist, the red stuff with the Panthers, and it's set in New Orleans, which is a place I've never been and always wanted to go. Of course, I've been since, but when it was set, you know, and it had the secret worlds kind of thing that I like, you know, like these people, she's walking into something that she has no idea about. And, you know, I just thought it was really sexy and creepy. I remember seeing it. It got under my skin. It like was disturbing. And to see somebody, like there's a whole scene where she's chasing a rabbit and you see the blood on her face and the flesh. Like there was so many creepy, weird things about people turning into things that they aren't. And then it had the most graphic arm getting ripped off thing I've ever seen in a movie, like right in the beginning. Like it wasn't even like, you know, at the end, it was in the beginning. So the whole movie, I kept waiting, like, okay, if they're showing this now, what happens later?
Yeah, what's coming?
Yeah.
it just freaked me out in the beginning. And I was watching the movie, like, what's going to happen later? Like, if this is happening now, there was a lot to it. But I liked the idea, somebody looking at sexuality as a monster. You know, when she got sexual, she would turn into this monster. And this guy didn't care anymore. He was so in love with. He's like, I'm just going to tie you down. We're just going to go. There was so much stuff in it that I was trying to figure out, but I enjoyed it. And I mean, of course, she's great to look at. Annette O'Toole looks great in it.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it was Malcolm McDowell. I only knew him from Clockwork Orange. So it was nice to see him again. And he's always freaky and weird. And for some reason, I totally bought them being brother and sister because they had some weird look to them. There was just a lot I liked about it, but I think it was one of those movies where it's not the scene for scene, it's the mood of the film. The mood,
okay.
This horrific, scary world I didn't know about. Like if I never turned down that street, I'd be okay. That I don't want to ever deal with that world. That world is frightening. And visually it was beautiful. You know, Paul Schrader grabbed this full on and went for it. It's just one of those movies, every time I watch it, it's a little creepier and it's a little weirder. And of course, it had to end the way it ended, you know. And thank God they never made another one. I was happy, like, we don't need a part two. This said everything it needed to say. But it was also, you know, like I said, for a very American person, she was, Kinski was like erotic, exotic, and
yes.
All these things. Like she was a different creature. Walking through that world, like she was almost not of this world that they set up before she started changing into an animal. So I it was one of those horror movies that I liked it because it felt like when I first saw the werewolf movie when I was a kid, it felt like another version of a classic horror film. And I'm not big into slasher films, you know, I'm not like, you know, I've seen a billion of them, but this one has something more to it. I just felt it is a very lasting thing. I still watch it and still enjoy it because I keep catching stuff. And I think John Hurd, that's probably the best he was in anything. I thought he was great in
The Fly.
You know, I like him. You know, he's always playing a bad guy later on, like a real dick.
Right.
You know, but he was actually, I felt for the poor guy. And I was like, yeah, would I hang out with Kinski if I knew she'd turn into a panther and maybe kill me? Well, if I tie her down enough, I guess I could. There's a lot of stuff being said in this movie that if this movie came out now, it would not work. Like there's a lot of stuff in it.
The feminists would be all over this film. It would be torn down from the theater.
Yeah. And also Giorgio Moroder soundtrack. Oh, just
so wonderful.
Oh, it's probably the best thing about it. I think.
You know, it's like the soundtrack. Again, you could have put a different soundtrack on us, and none of it would have worked in a weird way. But it really was a reflection of the year it was made, 82.
Yeah, the only other possible alternative soundtrack wise to this would have been Tangerine Dream.
Yeah, Jan Hammer.
Jan Hammer, maybe.
Miami Vice. You could take this soundtrack, put it on Miami Vice, and it would work.
Yeah. Right.
But that's my guilty pleasure movie. If it's on and I'm changing the channels, I'll stop and watch it.
I'm a tremendous fan of Paul Schrader. I really like his work, and I like a lot of stuff he's written. He has done some bad stuff as well. Like most filmmakers, he has a range, but he has also done some truly amazing stuff. I do like his visual style. He did an absolutely brilliant, underrated film called Light Sleeper in the 90s that I'm a huge fan of, and literally almost anyone I mentioned that to that movie to, they've never even heard of it.
That's Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, right? Willem That's Dafoe and Willem Susan Dafoe. Sarandon, Dana Delaney. Yeah. Great movie. Yeah. And I stumbled into that one, had no clue, and I absolutely fell in love with it. I feel like at 2 hours long, this movie is just a little fat. I feel like if this movie were trimmed down, and the thing is, thinking back on it now, without really digging into it, I'm sure there's stuff that could be trimmed. I'm sure there are sequences in there that could be narrowed down a little bit. But I think if you trim this down closer to an hour 40, I feel like it would move a little better. I just felt like at times it was just sort of not uncat-like, just kind of lying around and just sort of languishing. And maybe that's part of the allure of it. Maybe that's part of, ties into the feel of the movie, is that sort of like just lazy dread that's there lurking in the shadows. And then just, then the next thing comes up and she's there or he's there. Overall, I enjoyed the movie. That I have to say that ending absolutely surprised me. I was like, so you kept the human one and enslaved the cat one, but you've got both. A, well played.
And Annette O'Toole doesn't seem to mind at all about any like that.
I'm sure I'm sure she has no clue, dude.
Well, I don't know.
Dude, there's no way she knows that's Nastassja Kinski.
He might not know about the cat, but he brought her to live with them, or with him. I mean, come on. She had to know something.
Right, but by then, she was gone. The cat had run away.
No, I don't think she knows about the cat. She must know that he's sleeping with this girl. I mean, and she just is like, oh, well, I'm going to go for a swim.
I'm saying at the end, he's with Annette O'Toole, but the cat is the cat and caged up. She doesn't know that that's Kinski.
She's still living
at the zoo.
I took it as she doesn't want to be human anymore. Yes. And this is her final form and they're not going to have sex anymore. That's what I took it as.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's fucking the cat. No, I don't. Well, that's no. Not, that's not. I mean, Schrader's a little bit of a lunatic, but I don't think that's where he's. It's two different kinds of pussy we're talking about here. Okay. Come on.
Meow.
Yeah, meow is right.
Schrader did admit that he did create that ending. That's not the original ending that Alan Ormsby wrote. He said he changed it on purpose and put that ending in because that's what he wanted to do. There was a few other minor changes, but for the most part, Alan Ormsby's script is what was used for it. He admitted at least at one point during the filming of that movie that they lost one entire day's work because he was too high to work, to direct anything. clearly the events that went on, I mean, he talked about, he had made a film about, dreams and dreaming, or the people in dreams. And he wanted to do one about nightmares. And that was kind of this was the yang to that yin film that he had already done.
Go ahead, Hassan.
Very 80s movie, like painfully 80s kind of movie. There's a lot of like horror tropes in this that are, it's fair to say it's so early in the genre from the decade of the 80s that they're not bad tropes at that time, but Annette O'Toole's walking through the pool house and she clearly hears a fucking panther, and she jumps into the pool, it's like,
that's peculiar.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe the panther wouldn't jump in the pool.
There's some stuff.
Cats don't like water.
The movie kind of should have ended. Felt like it should have. It ends correctly with Malcolm McDowell getting killed, and then, you know, using the perhaps like using the ambiguity of whether or not Nastassja Kinski is also like her brother. You know, there's a scene where she goes to talk to the maid in jail. Weird stuff in that scene too. She's like, "Don't leave me like this." I'm like, "I'm in jail. I don't know how you want me to help you." You know, but
poor Ruby D.
Yeah, exactly. Like, could
very
you
young Ruby D?
Could you help me? No, I can't. I can't do anything for you. I'm out of the film.
Yeah,
I'm already making another film.
This is my last scene.
Yeah, exactly. And so she leaves. She takes an Amtrak. She leaves. She ends up in some spiritual world with T'Challa and Wakanda and his dad in the trees.
Yeah.
And you know, Malcolm McDowell kind of explains the film, and you're like, well, if you had maybe done this in the beginning, she might be on board with it, you know,
and instead of letting her would have his arm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor Ed Begley.
Yeah. Poor Ed. Like, that's another thing. They said he was 27 years old. Like, there's no way Ed Begley Jr. was 27 years old. That dude was in Battlestar Galactica, but 1976 Battlestar Galactica.
Holy shit, really?
Yeah, there's no way. He was one of the pilots. He was one of the fighter pilots. But anyway, I'm sorry. I don't mean to know that.
I don't mean to know that.
I don't mean that. I really wish I didn't know that. It's a great movie. It's kind of like Where Eagles Dare. It's great in its shameless genre exploitation. You know, it's shamelessly it's a remake. So yeah. You know, it's being remade not because of the integrity of the original, but it's being remade because of because they wanted to put a stylish 80s spin on it, because that was the modern. You know, that was we're gonna imbue this with all 80s, you know, all 80s all the time, right from the beginning. Some of that music doesn't sit well with me, so as soon as the music started, I was like, oh man, here we go, David Bowie. You know, I don't have anything against it, but it's just not my cup of tea. It's a fascinating film. I wouldn't have watched it if we weren't doing this. You know, it wouldn't have been a movie I would have come across and paid attention to. I'm sorry?
I said me too. That's a great point.
Has a lot of integrity, has a lot of really interesting. It's kind of like, this is a really good movie underneath a lot of 80s gobbledygook that was like kind of put on top of it to make it palatable for, you know, modern audiences. You know, it's not like, it's not like Where Eagles Dare, where it's like, this is just great, you know, and we need more movies like this today. It's not that same attitude. This is a time capsule to the very beginning of the 80s decade, the what about me decade, right? Very interesting time capsule, very interesting. I don't mean to disparage it. It sounds like an insult. It's a very interesting relic. I thoroughly enjoyed the experience of watching it, you know. Yeah. I don't feel negative about it. But it was a hell of a ride.
Well, to Hassan's point, I felt like, and this is probably wrong, but it obviously, because this is what his four, I think this is Paul Schrader's fourth film, so he knew what he was doing by this point. But it felt like times, like there were a lot of good ideas in this movie, and then at times it just downgraded itself to like a student film with a bad plot point or a silly scene or just something. And that took me out of it at times. I'm glad I watched it, but I don't think I enjoyed it as much as you guys did. I will say that there are a lot of animals in this movie. And I mean a lot. Okay. And how about this zoo? Okay. Where you can literally, if you're not careful going up to these cages, you might get eaten. Okay. And you can go right up to these cages and try and pet the tiger. That they got a tiger, they got a panther. Then next to the panther is a baboon or something. I mean, it's the greatest zoo of all time. There'd be no zoo like that in this day and age. But there are a lot of animal scenes in the movie. That was interesting to watch and see, you know, what was an effect, what was actually, it seemed like a lot of times they were interacting with a real animal. In the autopsy scene, I mean, that's got to be a real panther he's dragging up on the table,
it is.
Right?
It is.
Is it just dosed or whatever?
Yeah.
I mean, that would take a lot for me as an actor to trust the dosing and drag that sucker onto the table, okay?
So here, one of the little tricks to that was the fact that in most of the scenes, wherever you had a situation where they needed to have someone interacting very closely, not that one, because that panther obviously was anesthetized, but any of the other scenes where, huh?
But not dead.
But not dead. Any of the other, most of the other scenes in the film, they actually dyed mountain lions.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
And had them stand. Panthers, they were.
Panthers are not trainable.
No. They're not domesticated.
Mountain lions are trainable. They have mountain lions that can be trained.
That's why they were so small.
Yes, exactly. Up close, they were much smaller. In distance, they were huge. And that's why.
Yeah, that scene where it's running again in that small room.
Oh, yeah.
Running up the wall and going, ripping everything apart. Yeah. It's like, wow.
Yeah, well, yeah.
That's like a thing. You're like, that's a 200-pound cat right there.
Yeah.
Don't mess with me.
I thought.
And you know what? I have a normal-sized cat that could do that to a room very easily. So a 200-pound cat would probably bring that building down.
The bed was just destroyed. The bed was gone. I love that. I love the last thing at the end where they freeze frame on the cat the first time, and then they play the music of the Bowie song, and then they unfreeze it and he growls at you. That was great. That was a classic way to end that. I've never seen that done before that effectively, and that made me laugh out loud. I literally like, all right, that's awesome. Great choice. But I mean, the soundtrack. The two greatest parts of this film are the sound. I think the soundtrack. Even though it's 80s, it sets the mood from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the cinematography is just awesome throughout. And I don't know who his cinematographer is, but he must have done other stuff worthy of note.
John Bailey?
John Bailey?
Yeah, John Bailey. He's done
John Bailey.
American Gigolo.
Director-directed.
Let's see. Without a Trace, Big Chill, Racing with the Moon, Pope of Greenwich Village, Silverado.
Holy crap.
Brighton Beach Pope Memoirs, Swimming in Cambodia, Tough Guys Don't Dance, Accidental Chorus, My Blue Heaven, Groundhog Day is one of it.
Ah, that's great.
In the Line of Fire, Nobody's Fool, Extreme Measures, As Good as It Gets, Living Out Loud, Out of Town is this guy, man.
Michael Blue. He had a huge
film. He hasn't done a lot then.
Yeah, not at all.
And then mention something noteworthy, please.
All the way up to 19, he has films from 1971. It looks like a good 60 films or something like that. He's got a good eye.
That helped it. That helped the mood of it a lot. Yeah. And Schrader's direction is very smooth too, and I like that. I think, you know, there are seamless scenes, and the way. It segues to the next scene. That's all great. I just think at times, I think maybe one more rewrite of that screenplay. I know it's a remake, but just to, like Steve said, maybe honing it down a little bit would have helped it. But I'm glad I saw it. It's a unique pop culture piece that I had only known about through title alone. I had known about the movie by title, but knew nothing else about it. And it was cool seeing all these actors in it and what they did with their product.
Yeah, it's not at all ambiguous, you know? It's called Cat People. It's about cat people. You know, I mean, it's not it's there's no mystery. No.
I thought it was about zookeepers when I first started watching it. Then I realized it was about panther people who fucked and killed people. That
goes to show Hollywood
ladies in houses who lived alone with their 40 cats.
Every single older woman.
Yeah, Hollywood can aggrandize any profession, you know.
It's where the tomb cougar comes from.
These zookeepers come in like Indiana Jones zookeepers, you know, like in the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Like these, like the SAS.
It's like they seem special to be the first unit. They seem to be the first call on the police's like list when anytime anything happened. They're like,
yeah.
We found another body. Call the zookeepers.
I forgot to mention Frankie Faison is in this movie when he was like,
that was so
and
awesome.
With his voice dubbed.
Yeah, because that was not his voice. I'm like, that is not Frankie Faison's voice.
Schrader didn't like his voice, and he had him over.
Oh, that's terrible.
It was also a movie where it was nice that there was no CGI back then.
Yeah.
Because when that when she's turned into the Panther thing, and it's on top of him, and you really feel like they're there, you know. And even the corny, you know, cat version where she's chasing the rabbit, it, even though it's corny, it kind of has this nice atmosphere, this creepy.
No, it works. Yeah.
Atmosphere, yeah. That, like, yeah. Like, it's almost otherworldly, but I prefer, like, The Thing. Like, we talk about The Thing where it's not CGI, it's all models and
practical.
Yeah, because yeah. I just feel it's sometimes the CGI pulls me so far out of things. Sometimes I feel like there's no threat.
Like the remake of The Thing or the prequel
to The Thing. That. Wow.
Interesting you bring up The Thing, Jimmy, because so Cat People was the actual second film. Part of a program that the studio had just picked up the rights to all of the RKO film library. So they had a program in place where they were going to go through and begin remaking a lot of classic RKO films. The first one was The Thing. The second one was Cat People.
Wow. Same year too, right?
There were no more.
Well, they were one for. Well, yeah, I mean,
but The Thing was a very notorious flop, you right? Know? So,
yeah.
This was pretty interesting. Cat People and Where Eagles Dare both had the same box office.
Again, you know, it's always funny, right? Because you know these movies make money in other places. Somebody online was telling me, they were explaining to me. Because it was based on the comics I wrote, the Birds of Prey, and they were telling me how much Birds of Prey, Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey movie that came out, and you know, it did like over $200 million or whatever, and someone was telling me, well, you know, it's a flop because it costs $83 million and I'll never get back the money and this and that, and I said to them, I said, do you know they sold over 16,000 licenses for the movie before it ever came out.
Wow.
And they're not cheap, the licenses.
No, they aren't.
Nuts.
And I said, you know, I said, all you guys arguing over budget versus box office, I said, these movies make money in so many different ways you can't even imagine, you know. But whatever. I mean, I was defending it because just people didn't want to see it because they were telling me why they don't want to see it. And I said, okay, but when you see it, we can talk about.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but Walt always talks about that, where he's always like, you know, the comic book fan has the unerring. He has to tell the truth no matter what. You know, it's like, you know, he's always talks about the guy who would come up to him and be like, "You're my third favorite comic artist. I really like your work," and it's like,
get away
thanks.
From me. Yeah, get away from me.
But I get, you know, I used to hate your stuff.
And they think they're doing you they think they're paying you a compliment, you know, they're leveling with you.
I'm just happy they read it, whether they hate it or not, you know.
That's right.
I used to read like the reviews of my own stuff because I would be like, oh, what are they seeing that I don't see, you know, anything. And I realized that, like, okay, when they start talking about me in the first two sentences and not the book, I'm like, I'm not going to read that one because
giving
the history of me, and then they review the book, and you can tell like right away he doesn't want to read this.
Yeah,
you know, or
context.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, it's, you know, I'm very like Teflon skin with that kind of stuff because it's like I don't care. I write my comics for me to enjoy. Like, I have to like it. If I don't like
that's
it,
awesome.
Right? I'm not going to hand it.
It's a bonus. If someone else likes it, it's a bonus.
Right. That's right. Awesome.
Exactly. That's nice.
One last thing about Cat People. Someone who watched it with me did like it a lot.
Is that Natasha?
Yeah. We're going to have sex later. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm
Always making it weird.
Yep.
I'm leaving the only pussy he's gonna have for a while joke on the table.
That's a good place.
So, I think
that's for the archives, bitch.
You didn't leave it on the table.
Yeah. He did, but he pointed at it.
And then I flipped it. Yeah. I flipped the table. We should probably go down the tubes.
And again, the internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
So now we are on to cat people posters.
Let me open that. All right. U.S.
I love U.S. That. Yeah. Let's see, which one did I have first? U.S. Advance.
I love it because it's corny 80s. It has airbrush eyes. It's got the slash under the logo of cat people. But they didn't stick the lettering over the art, which I kind of appreciate right here.
Yeah.
Right.
The rain thing. I mean, it's the mouth is so sexy. I just want to be alone. Yeah.
That's one of two images. If you look next at USA, the advance image and the USA image are essentially the two images they use for most of the campaign worldwide. There were some modifications.
Yeah. I like the tree with the panthers on it. That's
what I didn't notice is if you go to actually the next one, US variant, there were actually three different versions of this poster made, which I never knew. I only ever saw the red one.
I think the red one works best.
Yeah, me too.
Yes, I agree.
The red one's it's a classic cover poster. It's really
nice. It is a good one.
It says what the movie is too, which I like.
Yeah.
Right.
Without giving anything away.
So next is the U.S. Or the U.K. Advance Quad.
Okay, the problem is the tree looks like
it's leaking cats
of the ocean. No,
oh yeah, it looks like coral or something.
It looks like coral,
but like veins or something.
And
yeah, because they've got a weird filter over it.
Well, because I used to do posters, right? Like, I'm going to show you something they do. So you look where her hair is around her neck, where it hits the purple.
Yeah.
You can see the artist didn't even soften it out. He just cut it, and then just cut the hair and that's it, you know, just left it. But you could see where he retouched the skin around the ear and the hair around it. It's really sloppy because if you look at the hair, you can tell where he went with a hand brush to try to soften it out a little bit. But when they did the eye, they went full on airbrush and they didn't take in consideration the grain. So the eye looks really sharp where the eye socket looks like grainy.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a fail for me because I'm noticing things I shouldn't be noticing.
Well, that's, you know, hey, that's how you were trained.
Yeah.
So next is the UK general release quad, which is that.
Word out the animal. Oh, that's cute. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's what it is. It's really simple. It's graphic. It's nice.
Yep. Okay. Next is the Bosnian edition.
Yeah, it looks like a polarized version of the other one.
Yeah, they did something. I think it's probably just a bad print job, to be honest.
Yeah, it's okay. It's the same thing though.
Yeah,
almost. You know.
Same with France.
Yeah, France. Yeah. Except that they drew the cat. See the cat.
Yep.
It's not really. You can't see its ears, which makes it really weird. It could be a dog.
It's very true. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Plus the tongue is kind of like, I want to put a hot dog there.
Yeah. Taco. Like a mini taco.
Right. Like, yeah. This is kind of a fail because I'm noticing weird stuff as I look.
Yeah. I mean, Taco Cat. It doesn't work.
No, Taco Cat's the name of my new book, so we can't. Okay.
So the next is the German fully painted version.
Okay.
Better tongue.
Okay, the problem with this is they went to the Jersey Shore and got an airbrush artist to do it. And it used to be on the back of a jacket, and they just made a poster out of it.
There you go.
They
actually took a close-up picture of the side of a van.
Yeah. At least the cat is better. The cat is better on this one, and he's not doing the hot dog thing. So
no, he's not. Better tongue.
Better tongue.
More tongue.
Less taco tongue.
Next is Japan, and they felt it was important to make the water that was leaking out of her mouth blood.
Oh, and she's got a giant piece of glass in her hand.
Yeah.
Where she stabs him.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. They didn't take the time to take the shadow off of Malcolm McDowell's face.
Uh-huh.
So it looks really weird.
Yeah. You
know? Plus, you should pop that up another like 25%. It should be a little bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the blood coming out of her mouth, it doesn't look like blood. It looks like some sort of taffy that melted.
Yeah.
Right.
Jelly donut remnant.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a weird one. Because they changed their eyes and they changed their hair too. So it's a little weird. Yeah, man.
Yeah, it completely reshaped her head.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah, she's, if you put your thumb in front of it, you can't see it anymore.
And she looks like she's half asleep. She's like they woke her up to do the shoot.
She's much more sultry here.
Yeah, I don't know about this one.
The air was sultry.
Yeah, next is the Polish.
Right, which, they just used a still from.
They took a high school yearbook picture and
it's Ludzie and Cody.
The Adventures
one,
of
that one looks like somebody. Honestly, somebody just made it up, like a flyer for
that's her. That's her 8x10 glossy.
This is like a promotional still. This is like a promotional thing.
They were going to show it in your school basement. You know. Okay.
Film Polsky.
Yeah.
So next is Spain.
Another version.
Yeah.
Again, Taco no ears cat. On the cat, right?
Yeah. Yep. So. Cat ears are down. He's very
Taco
angry.
Taco cat returns.
Very angry. Taco cat returns.
Not a lot of variety going on here, huh?
No.
Like
not
Blade Runner is.
Not until we get to the next one.
Okay, Turkey. Okay, sold. Well, it's got
boobs. Oh, wow. Okay.
Got boobs.
That is not John Hurt, though.
From When Eagles Dare.
No, it looks more like Don Johnson.
He is John Johnson. It looks just like Don.
That is weird. The lines on the cat's face are like a surreal Japanese catfish.
Yes.
You know? And Annette O'Toole in the pool, she's got her back to the panther. You know, it's not a great look.
No. Unless maybe that's the mirror, right? So she's seeing it in the mirror.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, the light coming off Kinski.
She never really sees it, though, does she? Oh, yeah.
No.
You know, when you can't draw hands, you do everything you can to avoid it. Like on top of Natasha's hand, her hand is gone on her head.
Yeah.
Posted. And his hand on the bottom, the thumb looks like it's not attached to the rest of his hand. It's a strange line. Plus, it looks like Malcolm McDowell is ready to box. I don't know why. He's got the towel around him.
Yeah, or just finished a really tough workout.
It's a really strange choice to show people on a bridge, too, like on the cops. With the just
right,
you know, like you can't, nobody sees it. They're looking at the terribly rendered nipples. this is at least more interesting than the other ones because it's got like, although I don't know what that logo is, that red logo with the what, like, man, that's wild. And then they put it in English on the bottom, cat people.
Yeah, I think that's the Turkish version of cat people, okay. But you know. Just want to make sure people know.
That's interesting, man. That one's
So next is a fan poster by a guy named Harder. With a T, not with a D.
This one's not bad, but one of the cats in the tree, he kind of looks like Bigfoot laying down, like humping the trunk.
See what I mean? Yeah. Right in the middle, right?
The I mean, just bad.
How about the one on the branch to the left? You just see his head and a paw.
Yeah, where's the rest of him?
Yeah.
And how about the one where her head is above? You just see a butthole and a little like this. It's really terrible.
The one on the rocks looks like the one on the rocks looks like he's passing one. Look at that. Yeah.
That looks like a house cat, the one on the rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
You know what? Design wise, it's kind of cool though. If the red,
yeah, it is
better.
It is.
I do like the orange and the polarized picture of her when she gets all cat like. Kind of cool. It's not bad.
So next is a piece by Justin Osborne. This was done for Shout Factory's Blu-ray release.
Oof. Okay, I don't know who the girl is, but that does look like Malcolm McDowell.
Yep.
Look like Kinski.
Or John Hurt.
Oh, that's John. Oh, my. Oh, no, that's Iron Man. What's his name? Robert Downey.
And that is not a Black Panther, by the way. That is some other kind of cat.
It's like a wolf cat or something.
Yeah.
That's a cat from Stephen King movie with the cat, the people that turned into the cats?
Sleepwalkers.
Sleepwalkers.
Oh boy, that's just a horrible film.
That's Son of Taco Cat.
Taco Cat Returns.
This is a fail if you can't nail the main star.
Yeah.
Did you hang this on your wall?
No.
And they actually, with the Blu-ray release originally, you actually got prints of this. So,
of course you did. For free. They were giving them away.
Oh, yeah.
They sent them to you even if you didn't buy the Blu-ray.
They made it so you can't rip them.
They're printed on that Mylar fabric, so you can't actually rip it.
That doesn't work.
Lastly is just a really quick minimalist piece.
Did you do this one before we got on?
No, I did not.
He wrote the tagline, that's for sure. I mean,
how can you get the word people wrong? It looks like popol. It doesn't read as people.
You're right. The spacing is off. It's kerning like on the letters or something.
Capiopla.
Yeah.
No one do justice to this movie.
The eyes are so out of focus and pixelated.
Yeah.
And the lettering on cat people.
And too far apart.
Right. Yeah, and then the nine lives text is perfectly clear.
It's sort of like, I just got this new computer and look what I can do.
An Apple IIe.
Look what I made in Paint.
Oh man,
I'm a graphic designer.
Let me tell you something, I can do this all day with looking at posters and finding things. It's fun, but it's amazing how terrible so many of them are,
right?
Because it's definitely an art. The art of the poster, I'm a huge fan of the art of the poster, you know, and there's so many great things you can do, and that's not them, the cat people.
You want to do a podcast, Jimmy? We'll just do a podcast about movie posters. Just
picking Jimmy so I can have these people knock on my door. I heard you.
Yeah. Oh, my spacing is wrong. Fuck you.
Yeah. We'd only do it if we celebrate the great ones too. You know, the ones.
Well, obviously. Yeah.
Most of our other casts, there's more a higher percentage of better posters. This was one of the lower percentages of good posters.
These two films didn't have a whole lot of fan art for them. For films, like we just did Stand By Me last week, and there were like 30 fan-made posters for that film.
When we
really good ones
do the Clint Eastwood posters, we do like 12, you know, and they'd say this one's going to overseas, this one's going to London, this one's going to Italy.
Right.
We would do all these things, and at the end of the day, he'd always pick the ones with the big heads on them because he knew that was why the movie was going to sell him, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's interesting. Like I said, the Bill Gold, if you look him up and read about his life,
I know who Bill Gold is.
Yeah, you'll really appreciate. He taught me so much about posters and spacing and.
So what years was that?
It was 81 to 90.
Okay. All right. So you would have just missed it. So he did three prelim images that have managed it. I think he actually may have released himself in later years.
Yeah.
Preliminary Alien posters that he did that he put together that are all awesome. They're such great pieces in and of themselves.
He knew how to marry lettering to
yes. Yes.
I have slides. I have to make prints or, you know, they're actual old slides. Because one of the gigs we got was to do the movie poster for Never Say Never. So we hired Robert McGinnis to do all these beautiful paintings. I have them all in slides. I don't know where they exist anymore. And the studio came back and said, it looks like the 60s. We don't like it. And I said, well, that's what we were trying to do. It was kind
Hello?
Of... They were beautiful, right? And we lost that gig, and they went to a studio, and they did that horrible airbrush James Bond. It was terrible. They never posted. It's terrible. That's the one they picked as the final, and we just sat there like, oh, my God. You know, like, what can you do? You know?
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So Jimmy, thank you. I very much appreciate you doing this. Thanks for hanging out with us. I was going to say, I wanted to warn you ahead of time, but
you know what? Amanda works till like 2 a.m, so it's great. Now we can go meet up and have a late bite and hang out.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, she's a night owl.
But thank you very much. I genuinely appreciate you giving us your time.
Well, thank you. This was a blast. You guys, it's fun to see other perspectives of something you're so used to. It's great, you know. It's because you learn a lot. You get to see what other people see, and it makes you appreciate things even more. So thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you.
And that's, you know, that's one of the things that we like, you know, that's why we like having guests on and letting them pick the film, because, you know, you never know what they're going to pick, you know, you hope they pick something that you like. And we've been pretty lucky so far in getting films that, you know, have been stuff that either we already knew we liked going in or we hadn't seen them before. So it's fun to watch, you know, classic films that we just haven't seen or maybe haven't seen in 20 or 30 years. But again, thanks to Jimmy Palmiotti. Thanks to Purple Planet Music. Get your own awesome music at purple-muteplanet.com. Please check out our website at cinementalpod.com for all of the poster images that we discuss on our Down the Tube segment. And don't forget to download and subscribe to Cinemental wherever you enjoy your podcasts. You can always listen to new episodes of Cinemental at cinementalpod.com. Also, if you're on social media, who isn't, we're on all of them at cinementalpod. For Hassan Godwin, Latham Conger, and myself, we say thank you so much for listening. And as always, in the words of our friend and mentor, Truman Burbank.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Beautiful. Well, thank you, guys.
Oh, Jimmy, thank you. Really appreciate it. That was
hopefully we get to see you at a con someday soon.
Yeah, right? I think it's probably going to be a little while.